How we doing, men? We doing well? When I was a kid, somewhere along the way, I learned this phrase, go big or go home. Anybody ever heard that phrase before? Go big or go home. Turn to somebody and tell them, go big or go home. That's, there you go. You know, the ironic thing was I was naive enough as a kid to believe that phrase. Many of you were too. You remember when you were a kid, maybe whatever your sport was, if you were basketball or football or baseball, you would picture scenarios in which you would be the hero at the end. You ever remember those days? And for me, football was the thing, and Notre Dame football was my deal, and so I would. Out in my yard at my house, I would throw the football up in the air, and I'd picture that it was the national championship game, and I was
the quarterback had thrown the ball, and I was the receiver, and I would throw the ball way up in the air, and I'd run and catch it, and in the moments as a small child, you remember this, you started the celebration because you were the
hero in the moment. It was go big, and you believed that, and then somebody burst your bubble and you went home. And I don't know who's in charge
of the police athletic league, but for those of you who are in charge of that, I've got a bone to pick with you, because I was over 105 pounds as a fourth grader. I was a chubby little guy. And all my friends were quarterbacks and receivers, but I was a lineman. And I remember going home and crying to my dad and saying, Dad, I got an X on my helmet. I'm a lineman. And my dad saying, Chris, we Duncans have all been linemen. I was a lineman. Your grandpa was a lineman. His grandpa was a lineman. That's just the way God made us. And so I went home. High school, I got to the place where I started to dream about what I wanted to do with my career. And while other people were talking about doing things like being school teachers or attorneys or working at the local Chrysler plant, I grew up in this community, by the way, I recognized that for me, my aspirations in those moments is that I didn't want to just work at Chrysler. I actually wanted to be the president of Chrysler. And so I sent a letter to a fellow who was the president of Chrysler at that time. His name was Lee Iacocca. And I received a card from him, a little postcard from New York City that had this writing, a handwritten note that said, thank you for your interest in Chrysler. Thank you for one day wanting my job, but quite honestly, we don't have any positions available for you. Go big or go home. You know, whenever I, matter of fact, I found that out even in the church as a young youth pastor. I was pastoring a little church outside of Lexington, Kentucky, and I remember they did these things called revivals. Anybody here remember revivals when they do these weekend gatherings of bring a pastor in, they would speak, and the pastor of the church asked if I would do a youth revival for elementary kids, and I said, oh, that'd be great, and I went and handed out flyers to every elementary kid in this small community that I was a part of, probably 500-600 flyers that I handed out, and I went to the basement of the church that I was working at, and I set up every chair that I could find in the basement. And I set up about 200 chairs because I wanted to bring the good news of Christ to every elementary kid in our community. And I went upstairs to get some work done, and I come downstairs 20 minutes before the revival is supposed to start, only to find the senior pastor picking up all the chairs. And by this time, he'd picked up about 140 of the 200 chairs. And I said, what are you doing? And he said, Chris, you've worked hard, you've done all the right stuff, but I hate to burst your bubble. You're going to be doing good if you have 20 kids show up at this. I see how these things work. And I learned something that day. That for the church, we don't go big. We go home. And some of you have kind of done that in your life, haven't you? You had hopes and dreams, aspirations, thoughts. I mean, you wanted to do something big for God. You hoped that maybe you were the one that was going to change things around. And so you got into the profession that you're in. You got into the place that you are. And you were the person that was going to change everything around. And you said, I'm going to do this. And then somebody knocked you down and you went home. And church for you is boring. You sleep through half the sermons. You're worried that the message doesn't talk to you directly and the music's too loud or too soft, or you get comfortable with the kind of things that you like. And the reason that you do that is because somewhere along the way, you chose to go home. Not go big, but to go home. There was a time in my life where that all switched around. God called me to a place called Las Vegas, and I had this idea that church was about numbers and not about multiplications. You see, the Bible in the book of Acts talks about churches and multiplications, right? I mean, somebody throws an invitation and 3,000 people come forward. I mean, you see big things like that. And most of us here say, oh, that was back in the church day. And I was taught even in seminary that, you know, that was the kind of things that happened in the early church era, but those types of things don't happen today. And so I saw that until one day God revealed something to me, this idea of how much He loves us and how big God is. I was at the church for about 8 months, and we had grown from about 1,400 to 1,700, and we were seeing some really cool things happening, and we were moving from a portable facility to a permanent facility. And so we told everybody in the church that weekend, meet us in our new facility next weekend. And there were 1,700 people that we told that to, and we said, join us next weekend in our permanent facility. And we showed up for the first Sunday in our permanent facility, and 4,000 people showed up at our facility. We didn't have room for people. People waited in line to come to church. We added an extra service just to get everybody in. The fire marshal showed up. You got to love those guys when you're a church that God's doing something big. And said, you know what, you guys only have 1,500 seats and you got 2,000 people. You're going to have to move some people out of here. It's a great thing. And we did. And we said, we'll just keep doing services until everybody gets a church. And God taught me something that day. That instead of go big or go home, I changed my thinking to go big, then go home. And quite honestly, that's how I live my life. And whether you know it, that's how God created you. You got a little piece of paper in front of you, and I'm going to give you a couple of ideas of what God thinks about you. Because when God built you, when God made you, when God formed you, He put an entire life in front of you. And God set you out and said, go big! And most of us in the room said, yeah, that's a great idea. And you stepped out there and somebody chopped you off enough that now you're staying home. And let me tell you, the Father of the universe who loves you, who cares for you, who sent His only Son to die for you, He grieves every day that you stay home. Let me tell you how big God is. First one there is, you can see this. The first truth for you today is this. You were wonderfully made. Can you believe that? I love the way the New Living Translation puts Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10. For you Bible scholars, it says we're God's workmanship. Most of us learned that word along the way. The actual original meaning of workmanship is somebody who could take a piece of wood and craft it into this incredible masterpiece. So the New Living translates the verse this way. You're God's masterpiece. Think about that. I mean, God went big with you. I don't know if you've ever been to an art gallery, and having been around some major metropolitan areas, I've had the chance to go to a few art galleries, and one of the things that I know is that when they have masterpieces, the incredible works by a person by like Picasso, what they do is they will put the smaller masterpieces in the front, and then you get to the back of the gallery, they have these lighted areas, and they make sure that it's lighted in such a way that the light is perfect onto the painting, but it doesn't harm the painting, and they take painstaking time and recognizing that they will place it at a certain location on the wall so that you get the very essence of what the artist was trying to be a part of, because that person wrote and made and painted a masterpiece, and this is what God thinks of you. The sad part is most of us think we're $2 paintings that are picked up at a yard sale, don't we? That's not what God thinks about you. You ever thought about the thought that maybe God's got a picture of you on His refrigerator and He smiles at it every day? You see, what's a masterpiece to you and what's a masterpiece to me are two different things. I've got small children and they make me 7 or 8 masterpieces a day. We put them up and we display their masterpieces. People come to our house and they're kind to us. Oh, your kid's artwork, you know. Oh, someday there'll be something. You know what? It's still stick figures and little round things that they call bells and houses and things like this. But to me, it's a masterpiece. And that's what God thinks about you. And He thinks that so much that the second truth is this: He's pursued you. You see, most of us don't really remember what pursuit is like because we've been married for so many years that we pursued the woman of our dreams and then she said, "I do," and then we gave up on pursuit somewhere along the way and we forgot what that was. Some of us were once young in our career and we pursued a career that would move us in different ways and we continued to pursue that, and then we reached a point of comfortableness and we said to ourselves, "This is enough. I don't need to pursue things anymore." And so the idea of pursuit becomes a one and done for most of us. We get there, we've arrived, and that's enough. But you need to know that the God of the universe loves you so much that not only does He call you a masterpiece, but He continuously pursues you. And if you run from Him, He will run towards you. And if you walk away from Him, He will walk towards you. And He never stops pursuing you. He sees you in the darkest moments of your night when you're looking at pornography on a computer and still pursues you. And He sees you in the brightest moments of your day when you're trying to live for Him but making business decisions that you know are anti what He would believe. He still pursues you every moment. Look at the verse here found in Jeremiah. How'd you like to be this guy? God says, "I pursued you so that you would become a prophet. And guess what? Everybody's going to hate you. But I pursued you." Listen to these words of pursuit in Jeremiah 1. "Now the word of the Lord came to me saying," Jeremiah says, God says to him, "before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. I knew the decision you would make the night after the homecoming game with your girlfriend that you would later regret. I knew the moment that you would step out and call me your Lord and Savior. I knew you. I knew you." He even goes on to say, "and before you were born, I consecrated you. I set you apart," he says. "And before you were born," he says, "I appointed you to a prophet of the nations." And then Jeremiah says to him, "Oh, Lord God, behold, I don't even know how to speak. I'm only a youth. But the Lord said to me, do not say that I am only a youth." He says, "do not say that, for all to whom I will send you, you shall go. And wherever I command you, you shall speak. Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you to deliver you, declares the Lord." You see what he's saying here? Go big, then go home. He He's telling Jeremiah, I don't care what happens in your day. I don't care how bad things look. I don't care if everything else seems to be turning in a south direction and it seems like that the rest of the world is following them. You go big because I'm not going to walk away from you. I pursued you, I walked after you, and I'll continue to walk after you every single moment of every single day of your life. I'll pursue you. He says, don't be afraid of them. I'll deliver you. And the Lord put out his hand, he touched my mouth, and the Lord said to me, behold, I put my words in your mouth. Let me give you a living illustration. This is my wife and I's oldest daughter. I know what most of you are thinking. She looks just like me. Right? She's a living illustration of God's pursuit. See, we had a chance to bring her into our home at 2.5 months old in Las Vegas, Nevada. And I was so excited that I wanted to tell the church that I was at that time. The church was running about 7,000, and I was speaking that weekend, and I asked the people at the Family Services of Nevada, I said, can I put this picture up? And they said, absolutely, because we need more foster parents. And so you standing up and saying that you're a foster parent would be incredible to 7,000 people. What a great witness. And so I took her picture up and I said, here, this is a girl that came into our home just a couple of weeks ago. And with God's help, someday we hope to adopt her. And after the 11 o'clock service in our church, the last service, a lady comes running down the aisle, tears in her eyes, and she said, I was the worker who pulled that girl out of her house. I said, really? She said, 27 and a half years I've been doing child protective services, and this was the worst sexual abuse case I'd ever seen. You see, my beautiful daughter has 5 brothers and sisters. Mom and Dad thought that that would be a cool thing to have family orgies on Friday nights with the family. And it became so bad that basically they were put on something like 50 counts, each one of them, of sexual abuse with a minor. Because of laws, they were able to plead them down to 3 counts of abuse and neglect. But God pursued her. When she was born, her mom knew that she was not going to get to keep her, and so her mom gave Tiana, our little girl, a false last name. Actually, her last name is not her mother's last name. It's not her dad's last name. She knew that if she went 2 names out, that they couldn't trace it, and so her last name is actually a grandparent's maiden name, so that they couldn't trace it. 2.5 months, she comes into our house and mom continually tries to figure out ways to bring her. And we went through this process and we let her know that she was loved, but we didn't know if we'd get to keep her because obviously other family members wanted her, other people wanted to be around her. And the thing about the system was the system wanted to protect this child. They wanted to protect these children from ever having to deal with this kind of mess again. And so we walked through the system and I can still remember, fellas, I can still remember my wife and I flying to Las Vegas for a hearing with what they call permanency. And before we got into this hearing, we were there for a day, and I sat there and watched as the biological mom called us liars and called us all types of names. And in the end, in the middle of this, it was a 2-day hearing, took 2 full days, we were sitting there, and we didn't know if this little girl by that time, who was nearly 4 years of age, would get to stay with us. And I'll never forget, we were having a conversation at my in-law's house, and she was supposedly asleep in a back room, and we were talking about all of this stuff. And this confident, bold little girl, all of a sudden, heard enough words that she didn't think she was being pursued anymore. I went in to tell her goodnight, And the look on her face was a look that so many of you have. Are they going to quit on me? Are they going to give up? It was the one time that I couldn't tell her it was going to be okay. An aunt had come into the picture, and an aunt was trying to pursue all kinds of relationships, even though we'd had her for almost a year and a half to 2 years at this time. There was still this open moment. Some of you feel that way. I tell you that God pursues you, and it just swings over the top of your head because somewhere along the way you thought He forgot to pursue you. Go big. Then go home. Third and final thing here is truth, is that you have an inheritance. Yeah, that's pretty good, isn't it? I don't have a retirement plan, but I got one whale of an inheritance coming. Listen to what he says here in Ephesians 1:18. Paul writes these words, "Having the eyes of your hearts enlightened, that you may know what is the hope to which He has called you, which are the riches of His glorious inheritance in the saints." You think about this. This is how big God thinks that you are. That He calls you a masterpiece. He's pursued you constantly. And not only did He pursue you, but He gave you an inheritance. I'm not talking about a money inheritance here. God gave you a well that is so deep and so wide and so long because He loves you that much. That's the crazy kind of love that God has for you. And let me tell you something. It is for every single man, woman, and child in this room. You know what I've learned these days? I've got a new motto. It's called go big and then go home. I'm not going to stop. People think I'm crazy. Matter of fact, I've kept that motto ever since that time happened for me and I began to learn more about how God thinks how big that I am and how much He made a deal about me and how big it is that He pursues me and loves me and how God gave me this inheritance that this go big and then go home thing has become really kind of a centerpiece of my life, to be honest with you. It's a model of my life. I say things a lot that make people go, wow, that guy's a dreamer. He's out to lunch. He's a little bit crazy. And I'm okay with that because honestly, I serve a God that's bigger than any person and any naysayer, and I'm okay to see those kind of things. For instance, one time I was sitting with some friends that come to visit me in Las Vegas, and I can remember in the process of this, we were watching a poker room, and there was a fellow that was about ready to clean up on everybody else in this poker room, and I was explaining to them the kind of things that they saw on ESPN, and they were so enamored by this, and I said, this guy right here, he's got a big pile of chips, he's sort of the guy that's in charge, and then there's a guy over here with smaller piles of chips, and he's the guy that's in trouble, and then the guy with the big pile of chips takes all of his chips, and he puts them in the middle, and the guy with the smaller pile of chips puts all of his chips in the middle, and the room that's filled with 200 people watching this thing happen gets immediately quiet, and in the course of it getting quiet, here we are, we're wondering what's going to happen in this moment, and then the flop happens, and as soon as the flop happens, the guy with the big pile of chips immediately does this. One bet cost him approximately $380,000. That was everything he had. I was talking with him a few minutes later and I told my friends, you guys go back to my house because I believe in a big God who's bigger than losing $380,000 in one little poker hand. He didn't have any hope. Right there in the casino, I had the chance of watching him accept Christ as his Lord and Savior. And then he looked at me and said, can you come back and talk to my wife? And I'm thinking, no. You lost 380 grand. I didn't lose it. Right? I mean, you guys are thinking the same thing. I'm not showing up at some woman's house when the guy goes, sorry, dear, there went the mortgage. I'm not going to do that. But I did. It was a Friday night. The next day, him and his wife and two kids showed up at our church, two teenage kids, and And he said, you talked about this. We accepted Christ. Our next step was baptism. So we're here for baptism. So, okay. So we ran the water. We baptized him. It was Palm Sunday of that year. The next Saturday was Easter. We were in the process of doing 8 services during the course of a 2-day format, which was pretty common for us. And so we go to this first service, and after the first service, this guy walks up afterwards and he says, Pastor, he said, I want you to know. He said, I've been telling my friends about Jesus. He said, I've read the entire New Testament this week, and I was telling them about what Christ did for me and my family. And he said, my friends would love to know. He said, I've led these people to the Lord this week. There were 24 of them. And he said, I'd love to know if you would baptize them. And I said, sure. So we gathered our team together. They ran the water. They warmed it up, all the kind of stuff that you do. And so we started to baptize them. And it was the end of a service of 7 more services happening after that. And people were walking out and people were saying, what's going on over there? And they walked over and they said, that is incredible. I want that. And at the end of a weekend, 250 plus people gave their life to Christ and were baptized that weekend. Guys, we go big and we go home. Now here's the thing. I have heard enough stories of guys that tell stories of 5 years ago, 10 years ago, that makes me wonder, do they still go big or do they still go home? This past weekend at the church that I'm a part of, we decided a year ago that we thought it'd be a great idea to serve our community by serving in our community, outside the walls of our church, 10,000 hours. That was the idea. And we wanted to give away $100,000 to our community. And we thought that'd be great. We're going to try that in a year. We accomplished that in 8 months. We thought that we'd raise about $20,000 to take care of the under-resourced. We take care of about 120 families from under-resourced people in the south end of our county. And we thought we'd raise $20,000 to do that. That's what we raised 2 years ago to be able to help that out. And we came to find out last weekend that we raised $66,000 to help out the under-resourced in our community over the course of the next 2 years. Folks, I'm not done going big. Because I want you to know something. God still wants us to go big here in Kokomo. And He's placed inside of every one of you something that He wants you to go big in. So how about it? You going to go big? Or are you going to stay home? And really, that's the question. Because Christ went big with you. And He's still going big with you. And He's calling you out right now to go big. I mean, I have a vision, and the reason that I live in this community and came back to this community wasn't because of the weather. Let me tell you, that's not the reason I'm here. Las Vegas, Kokomo, weather, that's a little different. Matter of fact, I didn't even have a shovel when I lived in Las Vegas. Didn't need it. One time it snowed, and I got snow on my palm trees. Woke up at 6:30 in the morning to take a picture to show my mom that it snowed in Las Vegas, because by 8 it was gone. That's how life is there. It's tough. Somebody's got to live there. I didn't wake up one day and say, you know what, I'd love to move to Kokomo, because, man, those winters, I miss them so much. That's the thing I miss about it. I didn't wake up one day and say, you know, moving back to Kokomo, that'd be so wonderful, because quite honestly, the thing I love about Kokomo is the humidity, because there's no humidity where I live here. I'd love to go back and just, because I'm a large man, sweating a lot's my thing. I'd love to just do that more. And some of you are so busy being frustrated that you got stuck here, that quite honestly, you've been staying at home way longer than you needed to. I chose to move here because I'm going to keep going big until the day God calls me home. And He's doing the same for you. Think about your church. Maybe it seats 50. Maybe it seats 100. Maybe it seats 1,000, and for you, you look around and you say, oh, we got a good crowd today because 2/3 of the auditorium is full, and you forget the fact that statistically 55% of our community attend no church every weekend. You want to know if there's 50,000 people in Kokomo, somewhere around that area? They say there may be as many as 80 or 90,000 in Howard County alone. Guess what? That means that we would have to have somewhere around 40 to 45,000 people in a church this weekend that aren't in it. Is your church big enough to hold that? Go big. Go home. See, I think that quite honestly, God's called us to a movement. And one of the reasons that many of you are reading this book called Crazy Love, this book and talking about it, and it's changing you in some ways, is because honestly, somewhere inside of you, there is something that longs to go big. Thank you. There's something that longs to go big in you, and you went home a long time ago, and right now you're struggling with this idea because you're saying, man, I stepped out there, and there were enough people that told me no. There were enough people that thought I was crazy. There were enough people who thought I was out to lunch. There were enough people who thought I was just flat out nuts that I'm not going to do it. I'll leave that for the young bucks. I'll leave that for the next guy. I'll leave that for the next generation. And God is calling this generation. We don't know. We don't know if we have forever. Last night, I was at Howard Community Hospital and standing in front of a woman who had just lost her husband who died of a heart attack while trying to drive to get her soup. And she knows all about the go big or go home, because he's home. And she grieved so much last night, she looked at me in the face and she said, pray that my husband comes back to life, because I can't live without him. You may say, well, what'd you do, Pastor? I serve a big God. I said, God, if it's your will, we're going to see a resurrection here in these next few moments. Now, for those of you who are on the edge of your seat, it didn't happen. He's still dead. But yesterday morning, she didn't know that it was his last day. And you don't know that either. So what's unfinished business in your world? Go big. Or go home. Or can you adopt a model like I have? And that's this. I'm going to go big for the rest of my days, and then one day God's going to say, okay, Chris, now you're going home. And so I'm going to encourage you to do the same. We got 10 minutes for discussion, so here's what I'm going to ask you to do. Table leaders, you got some questions down there. Those are good questions. Those are questions I thought about 3 weeks ago before God revealed this message to me a few days ago. So you can ask some of those. But here's my first question I want everybody to be asking right now. Is there something that God's saying to you, go big, and you went home years ago? Come on, bring it to your table, men. Bring it to your table. Because I believe that He wants to use Kokomo in massive ways. I believe that He wants to make a transformation in our community in massive ways. And it's not because the government tells me I can't. It's not because my employer will fire me. It's not because this is going to happen or the system or the administration says that I can't. You know that God gave you a dream and you were going to go big somewhere along the way and you chose to go home. So what was it? And then join hands and pray and say, let's go big. Man, let's walk out of here and let's go big. Or you can be like 35,000 other Christians in this community and stay home. Be comfortable. Make your life nice and tidy. play the three favorite hymns that you have every week at just the right volume you like, so that you're happy and comfortable going into eternity. Well, man, you can step outside. And I can tell you this, life is so different in this world. I'll give you one last one. 2 weeks ago, I sat in front of a man that doesn't live very far from here. Not a Christian. God blessed him in immeasurable ways. In the last 5 years, he's made $100 million. Somehow God put us together. In a cool way. I won't go into that story. But I'm still going big. I looked at this non-Christian guy and I said to him, what would it take for you to give us $2 million to build a facility on our campus? And here's what he said to me. Just got to ask. So I did. Now the unfortunate piece is that he signed some agreements that he could not build that kind of a facility close to the facilities that he sold where he made all of his money. And so he's not going to be able to do that. But here's what I do know. There's one guy out there right now who desperately needs Christ. I'm not going to give up on him. Because quite honestly, he's got something big that God wants him to do. I don't know what it is. He's not even thinking down this road yet. But you are. Because you've got a head start. You've been thinking this stuff. So go big. And then go home. And for some of you in the room, when I get to stand over your casket, man, I hope that I get the privilege of saying, this guy went big. And now, he's home. And I want you to know, he's put that dream in so many of you in this room. So turn to your crew and have this conversation. Let me pray for you, and then we'll go into this. God, I believe that there are some folks in this room that you gave a dream 50 years ago that maybe they're sitting at a table right now that somebody who's 20 or 30 years younger than them can help them accomplish this dream. So help us, Lord, in this conversation to go big and then go home. God, there's some of us at these tables who are going, man, I had never even thought of this. It never even dawned on me. I just thought church was kind of a cool thing that I did. It was a social club. It worked pretty well on the weekends for me, something to do. And it got my kids something so they wouldn't swear at me on times that they got frustrated. And true, God, true to what you've always been through the entire New Testament and through your church throughout history, you've been a go big or go home God. I could have sat here and told story after story of history of how you've done that, Lord. But I pray that at the huddle, we will be able to look back one day and say, it was here that I told God we're going to go big. And He believed it. And we're going to keep going big till we go home. So Lord, bless our conversation. Move us out of these seats into a world that desperately needs you. In your name we pray, and all God's people said, amen. God bless you.